great to be back here again in Kyiv and to see you, but to also to see how life is coming back to the streets.
What I'm saying is that this is a government that is getting on with delivering for people of this country, and we've got a huge amount to do getting on with the job of standing up for British values.
I want you to know how sad I am to be giving up the best job in the world. But them's the breaks.
BBC News.
Read by Chris Aldridge, and we'll bring you all the latest news and further in-depth analysis on the day's events in the world tonight at 10 o'clock. This is BBC Radio 4, and now the writer, poet and comedian Henry Normal returns with the latest episode of his occasional series, this time recorded in Nottingham, the place where he grew up. This is Henry Normal, A Normal Community.
Thank you and welcome. My name's Henry Normal, and in this show I'll be looking at the concept of community. So it's apt we're recording here in the city of my birth, Nottingham. Yay! Thank you. With a live audience tonight from Nottingham, at last we can help the BBC fulfil its regional quota and get all its ailment ducks in a row. At Nottingham Castle, they have a statue of Robin Hood. It used to make me laugh as a kid to see that the council I'd put up a statue to an outlaw to inspire us, and then were surprised when the arrow kept getting nicked. It's changing Nottingham, though. It's going up market. I was in West Bridgford the other week, and I saw... Oh, yes. I saw a Maserati outside Greg's. So it's lovely to be here. Let's face it, after 2 years of pandemic, it's lovely to be anywhere, isn't it? I was shut away for a long time reading ancient Roman poetry. I had long Ovid. So I shall be using poetry tonight to help me explore my relationship with community, and it's worth remembering that a good poem isn't like a passing infection. It's something that can stay with you forever, like herpes. The word community is made up of two words. We could define it as unity through common interest. I mean, we're a community ourselves here tonight, aren't we? Joined as one, a group with a shared interest in subtle and sophisticated poetry. Just me then, okay. So my first understanding of community was in the back-to-back terraces at St Anne's district of Nottingham. I was born in a listed building. Unfortunately, it was listed for demolition. There's a Lidl where I was born. So I was actually born in my mum's bed, and my mum's bed now is where the fish fingers are. There's no plaque. Not worth looking. I should have said the toothpaste, there's no plaque. That would have been funny. I've done it now. So back in the 60s, there were seven of us living in a three-bedroom terrace house in St Anne's. Mum, dad and five kids. And yet there was a room downstairs. You're ahead of me, aren't you? There's a room downstairs we never went in. And that was called the living room. And we didn't live in it. I'll tell you what lived in it. Little glass ornaments. Brass ornaments, stuff we got from Skeggy, made out of shells. Every Sunday, we'd polish it up, and then we'd go back in the other room, cram together and watch the telly. Being from Nottingham as well, on everything, we had lace doilies. On the back of settees, on tables, on tops and everything. And I remember my Auntie Gladys. She lived up the road. And the only time I ever saw her in her living room was when she was dead. I sat into that. She was laid there in a coffin with a bloody doily on the top. I was told at school that Queen Victoria wore Nottingham lace stockings, so I've written this poem. Albert removed the royal lace while Victoria, she would sit. From the number of kids they had, he did that quite a bit. Of Of course, my Auntie Gladys wasn't my real auntie, but back in those days, anybody up and down the street was called your auntie and uncle because we looked out for each other. I was reminded of that recently because I had to go on the train to London, and I'm sat on the train and the doors closed and a voice came over the tannoy system. It said, "If you see something that doesn't look right, tell a guard." And I thought, aren't I got enough trouble? Brexit, COVID, climate change, the war in the Ukraine, and now I'm a bloody spy. I'm sat there, and every time the doors opened and closed, the voice came back on. "If you see something that doesn't look right, tell a guard." And we got all the way to the stop just before London, East Croydon. The doors open, and a man got on. He got a stripy shirt and a spotty tie. The guard didn't want to know. Not interested. I'm starting to have fun now. I might declare this a work meeting. Over 16 work meetings at Downing Street during COVID, and the police said that they had over 200 photographs. Now, you've probably, like me, been to a work meeting at some point in your life. How many photos did you take? You didn't take a one, did you? Some people might not be aware that they have a sense of community. I find it heartening how much we trust in other people. Think about it, right? You take a standard A road. You're driving down an A road at 60 miles an hour. It's dark. It's raining. Coming towards you is somebody driving at 60 miles an hour. And the only thing that stops you colliding at 120 miles an hour and killing you, a little bit of white paint. That's a lot of faith in a little bit of white paint, isn't it? It's a lot of faith in humans. This is called faith in others. We are born into the hands of others. Fragile, our lives hang on the kindness of others. We are fed, clothed, and sheltered by others. We are educated and protected by others. We are comforted and encouraged by others. We put our presence at the mercy of others whenever we're under a roof others have built, or stand on a foundation others have laid, or whenever we expect others to conform. When we get ill or infirm, we are indebted to others more than we can possibly repay. And when we become other, others will dispose of our body. Others will mourn. Orson Welles once famously said, "We are born alone, we live alone, and we die alone." I think when I was born, my mum was here. I don't know about you lot. No, you lot weren't there, just my mum. And I don't live alone. I live with my missus and my son. You know, I may die alone, but so far, there's tended to be an audience there. We are by nature social animals. Now, most animals have communities. Penguins huddle for eat. Social spiders build webs together. And animals hunt in packs, even across species. So dolphins drive fish up to the surface and birds attack from the air. And coyotes and badgers team up to hunt underground and overground. That's why you don't see any wombles anymore. Some animals do live alone. They only come together just to mate, like teenagers. Blue whales live alone, marine turtles, snow leopards, Putin. Orangutans live alone, giant pandas, platypus, ducks, polar bears, and jaguars. Now, here's a fun fact about jaguars. Jaguars, one of the fastest animals on the planet, they live alone, but when they come together to breed, jaguars mate up to 100 times a day. 100 times a day. You think that'd slow them down, wouldn't you? Now, on a 12-hour day, that's every 7 minutes, 20 seconds, with no lunch hour or tea breaks. 7 minutes, 20 seconds. It doesn't bear thinking about, does it? Unless you're in the House of Commons. And you've run out of tractors, maybe.
What's your record?
Well, I'll tell you. So I once had sex in a jaguar. It was an E-type Jaguar, and it took me 7 minutes to get my trousers off and 20 seconds to have sex. So I was as fast as a Jaguar, to be honest with you. I don't think I could have done it another 99 times, though. Oh, no. No, no, no. I only had the one Durex. It'd have been like a space opera, wouldn't it? That's not an image you want in your head. So, as humans evolved from apes, early man formed communities to mate and to rear children, to hunt and for security. And as we began to cultivate the land, food became surplus and people began to specialise, different people having different skills. Now, I'd have been no good back then. They didn't need any poets, you know, who could stack a dishwasher. That's about the extent of my survival skills. I think if I was on Desert Island Discs, you know how they give you a luxury at the end? I'd have to have Ray Mears. So our families are our first communities, and then we set forth to try and build a family of our own, and we go into the community, and I think that's a good thing, to find a partner. In Nottingham, there were supposed to be 6 females to every male. I used to think there's some bloke going round with 12 women. But I'm going out. You know, they say opposites attract. I was thinking about what would be a great couple that might attract to each other. This is called The Rhapsody of the Florist and the Butcher. Amid new life she skips, in death his grip is strong. She gives him her tulips, he gives her his tongue. I said to Angela the other day, I said, Angie, if you die, I will get another partner. Because you've got to be honest, don't you? You've got to be honest. I said, it might be another woman. I said, it might be another man. You know, I've not met them yet. Now, I think you can find beauty in anybody. I said, it could be a transsexual. Because I like to be open-minded. I'm what they call pansexual these days. I said, but because I've been with you for 30 years, I probably wouldn't have one partner. I'd probably have several. I'd probably be non-stick pan. Seemed a lot of trouble, that Joe, didn't it? But you're worth it, that's the thing. Being from Nottingham, of course, I identify with Lord Byron, although I haven't slept with my sister. But following the footsteps of Lord Byron, Alan Sillitoe and D.H. Lawrence, I bogged off somewhere warmer. In my case, Brighton for 30 years. We have chalk cliffs along the southeast coast, and it's quite inspiring, the chalk cliffs. And we think of it being quite a great symbol of this country, don't we? There's plenty of other colours in there. If you look closely, there's black and brown and green and all manner of stuff. But if you look, you can see the north coast of France. And of course, they have white cliffs. We don't really make a fuss of that, do we? And of course they have white cliffs, because at one point they were all joined up, weren't they? And that's how humans got here in the first place. So if you think about it, everyone in Britain, we're all immigrants. Unless you're a dinosaur, at some point your ancestors came here from Europe and beyond. And I feel lucky to be British. Not proud, I've not really done anything to achieve it. I was just lucky to be born here. I mean, if I was born in Germany, I wouldn't make it as a poet, because I don't know the language. I mean, them German kids, they've got to be clever, aren't they? Now, the first rule about being British is you don't talk about it. It's a bit like Fight Club. I think it's our main national characteristic. But the danger is, if you don't talk about being British, then it's left to the far right to define us and our symbols. So we need to do that. We need to grasp the nettle. I think as a community we share decency, fairness, good humour, civility. Now, these are not just British values. These are world values that we've brought with us, as we're all immigrants. We're a bit like the American dream, but, you know, with the volume turned down. So I've written a poem that I wrote on the South Coast. It's called Low Tide. The floor of the English Channel is exposed. My loved ones paddle barefoot in puddles. All around, toddlers and gulls find a new balance. Further out to sea, teenagers dare themselves another step. Sailing ships and even speedboats seem in no hurry today. There's a slight haze, like spilt flour on a blue tabletop.
A man in shorts loses himself with a net and bucket. Behind me, white cliffs stretch out open arms. Underfoot, the chalk continues south, crowned by seaweed. The myth of our island nation is revealed. We are, as ever, joined to each continent by land. The water just sits on the top, reflecting sunlight all the way to the horizon. Thanks. I'm sorry you ain't all got a cup of tea. I do love a cup of tea. I think during lockdown, my blood type's gone from type O to PG. It's our national drink, isn't it, tea? From India. What's our national dish?
Ketamine.
Ketamine might be your national dish. I'll try that again. What's our national dish?
Curry.
Curry, there you go. Again, from India. I love that we're instinctively very open-minded in this country. Even Britannia, she's actually Roman. It's really Athena. You know, Athena, of course, is the Roman goddess for playing tennis with no knickers on. The term Great Britain is misunderstood as well, right? Other countries don't usually bump themselves up, do they, in their names? You don't get Brilliant Belgium or Fantastic Finland or, not as bad as you might think, North Korea. Happy-go-lucky Afghanistan. No, Great Britain is from the Romans, and they wanted to distinguish which was the main island and which was the smaller island, you know, like Ireland, Isle of Wight, Isle of Man. It's nothing to do with being great. Even our national animal, the lion, is from Africa, as opposed to all those native lions, you see, knocking around. I think our national animal should be a pigeon. Or a seagull. Now, I know in the centre of Nottingham, we've got two magnificent stone lions, two fine representations of the king of the beast, but they still get covered in bird shit, don't they? I'm going to read you this little poem called Bird Spotting. Sick of seagulls shitting on your head? Ever considered shitting on theirs instead? Changing ends with our feathered friends, doing a Richard III on that guilty bird. Guano is a no-no, so quid pro quo, let go on any criminal crow. Cover a guillemot with whatnot. Go bobbing on a robin. Go muck a duck. Teach each turn our tables turn. On solids, do solids. Foul a foul, on owls, open your bowels. Gaff on a chiff-chaff just for a laugh. Poop on a coot just for the hoot. Stick stuff on a chuff till it's had enough. Soil egrets with no regrets. Plop on a pigeon a smidgen. Shit on a tit, see how they like it. Commit craven acts on ravens' backs. If you've got dire diarrhea, plan it so a gannet's near. Release on Canada geese. Unpack your pants on cormorants. Spray a jay and make your day. We're halfway there. Spread shite on a red kite. Present a pheasant with something unpleasant. Strain over a crane. Open your back door over a jackdaw. Leave a trail on a wagtail. Serve a woodpecker a double-decker. Curl a poo over a curlew. Let's make it fitting in Britain to say you've shitten on a bitten. But when all said and done, though retribution can be fun, never shit upon a swan. It is both illegal and obscene, and the sole privilege of Her Majesty the Queen. For the purest poetry fans, it's worth remembering that T.S. Eliot is an anagram of toilets. So, when my son, Johnny, was diagnosed with severe autism at the age of 3, my family became part of the autistic community. At the time, I couldn't find any information and I didn't know what our journey ahead was going to be like. And a lot of the books were treating kids as though they were animals to be dissected. And I wanted a book that treated them like human beings. So when Johnny got to about 19, I said to Angela, I want to write the book that I wanted to read when Johnny was 3 or 4 for all the people that are starting to experience this journey that we've been on. And I said, I want you to write it with me. And she said, I can't. She says, it's too painful. And I said, well, I'm going to write it. I've done a lot of things in my life, but this is the most important thing that I could do. So I spent a year writing this book. And then I took it to Angela and she read it. And she said, well, I can write better than that. So Angela wrote some chapters. It came out about 4 years ago. As you see, it's called A Normal Family. And it was classified as a bestseller by Amazon in the conditions and illness category. Just above a book where you colour in unicorns. Now, funnily enough, if you go on Amazon and you look for this, it says people also bought a hat in the shape of a chimney with Santa's leg sticking out the top. That's my readership, that. I'll read you the dedication. Dedicated to our son, Johnny, who you may not be surprised to learn has absolutely no interest in this book. We have 50 five-star reviews posted, many of them not written by myself. And we have one one-star review written by a chap called Derek. Derek in tonight? So Derek looked at all the five-star reviews and he thought, I'm going to go a different way. He wrote, I'm not autistic and I don't know anybody who is autistic. And I thought, well, you've got the right book. And he said, but this book is crap. Absolute crap. And I thought, well, you're the expert. And then I thought, no, here's the thing. I want you to accept my son the way he is. So I've got to accept each and every one of you the way you are. And I've got to accept Derek the way he is. And he's out there somewhere doing his best in his chimney hat. Johnny's 24 now. He's happy and kind and brave and he's lovely. He's 6'3" and he likes to paint big pictures. And I'm trying to get him into miniatures because he's costing me a bloody fortune. To be honest with you. He had an exhibition in Brighton at the Phoenix Gallery, which is the biggest gallery in Brighton, and more people came to that exhibition than had come to any other exhibition at the Phoenix. You can imagine how proud I was as a parent. Now, you know as well as I, it doesn't matter what you do in your life, what your kids do, that's where you take the real pride. It was the best day of my life. And I bet you're like this. I can't be happy unless everybody's happy. And there's always some bugger who isn't, isn't there? And an incident occurred. There was a woman that was rude, and I couldn't understand why she was rude. And then later, I wrote this poem. It's called Out of Place. How old was he when he first learned to paint? An elderly lady asked. I reached for a book to share a photograph of Johnny, draw him when he was 7. Just tell me, the woman barked. She had no interest in the photo. 7, I said, but more so the last 5 years. She retired to a seat in the corner. Her husband explained they had a grandson who was autistic. He doesn't paint at the moment, the granddad added. Visitors to the exhibition filed past, already anticipating the next painting. The joyful colours lit up the dull weather. The elderly lady sat alone for some time and avoided eye contact. Her frame hung heavy, her mind elsewhere. I've become a pensioner. I say I've become a pensioner. I'm 65. I should have become a pensioner, but they're moving it back, aren't they? They're trying to move it back faster than I can live it. So I've joined the pensioner community. So I sent off my test for bowel cancer recently, and I've written a poem about that. Called Posthumous. When testing for bowel cancer, the bit I like the most is not waiting for the answer, it's putting the poo in the post. Thank you. So I was speaking earlier about our sense of nationhood. Now, what nationality do you think St. George was?
Syrian.
Syrian, Turkish. You're both right. He was born in what is now Turkey, but back in the day it was Syria. It was part of the Roman Empire. His dad was Greek. His mum was from what is now Israel. He worked in Israel as a Praetorian Guard. He was a Christian, so they cut his head off. Now, if he was alive and well and he tried to get into England today, they wouldn't let him in, would they? So why St. George, do we think? Because of the dragon. No, that one's made up, that. No. Strangely enough. I tell you what it was. During the Crusades, the English troops were said to be helped by the ghost of St. George. And as you probably remember, Richard the Lionheart, he has a red cross. That's because he's French. Because that's what the French wore. He was King of England for 12 years, but he was only in this country for about 6 months. Now, all the kings and queens of England come from the line of King John, because Richard the Lionheart didn't have any kids, and a lot of the scholars think he was gay. And I think this is brilliant, because whenever I see the cross of St. George hanging outside somebody's house, I always think, what a tolerant person lives here. They've put up this lovely flag to this Turkish bloke because a gay French bloke wore it. So that's nice. We're a generation that said no to racist jokes, no to sexist jokes and homophobic jokes. And I think that's something to be very proud of. Now, my granddad came over from Ireland as a baby, and the only Irish joke I've ever liked is an Irishman goes for a job on a building site. And the foreman thinks he might be a bit thick, so he says, what's the difference between a girder and a Joyce? And the Irishman says, girder wrote Faust and Joyce wrote Ulysses. So thank you for listening to the show tonight. You've been a great audience, and I don't just see you doing radio. See you doing pop concerts and all sorts of stuff. So stick together and, you know, keep us a community. To end with, this is a poem I want to read for all those who feel disenfranchised in this country. This is called This Is Not an House of War. Everything I want for my children, I want for your children. Everything I wish for me, I wish for you. This is not an house of fear. This is an house of life. How can I not see myself in you? If you look, how can you not see yourself in me? You are respected as much as I am. You are of worth in equal measure. You are family. You are us. This is not an house of intolerance. This is an house of acceptance. We are the house, you and I. This is where you belong. This is where we belong. This is your home. This is our home.